Hello and welcome to Ops and Hops, the podcast for those who like beer but have to work in tech to afford it. Today's guest needs very little introduction for most of my followers, cloud content creator Andrew Brown. First of all, Andrew, what are you drinking and what made you choose it?
Cool, great. So today I actually have Innocent Gun, the original. This is a beer from, I believe, Scotland, Edinburgh, if I'm, yeah, I believe so. And I really like this beer because it is a, I believe it's a lager. Is it a lager? It's something. It's something. But what I really like about this beer is that it has kind of like a vanilla toffee and oak flavor to it, which they put in the description. It is absolutely my favorite beer. I don't drink a lot of beer, but when the local alcohol store had it, they brought in one case. I bought the whole case, and I'm set for the year.
Nice, nice. I today am drinking a Half Acre Bodum, which is being killed by my little filter there. There we go. Half Acre Bodum. It is an American IPA, as many of you will learn to will learn about me. I am kind of an IPA guy. I'm one of those guys. But I usually stick to the West Coast and the American style IPAs. I try to keep a lot of the fruit out of it. I really don't want to be drinking a mimosa. I kind of want to be drinking a beer, to be honest. But it's one of my favorite beers from the Chicago area, so definitely check it out if you get a chance. All right. So anyway, to the tech portion of the show, Andrew, tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are now, training and doing creating such amazing AWS, GCP, et cetera, content.
Cool. And while you were introducing me, I was confirming whether this was a lager or an ale. And the answer is, I don't know. But I'm going to crack my beer open first. And I actually do have this really nice glass that came with the case. There was like a Christmas package, and it actually had some additional flavored ones. One was Scottish cherries, which was super, super, super good.
That sounds fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And then like a Caribbean rum. Bako, my co-founder, who's also my neighbor, who's also named Andrew B, which is confusing. He also really likes Innocent Gun, but he doesn't like those specialty flavors. And so I would swap out originals with those ones. And so he'd get all originals and I'd have all the fun ones. But I just have original here today. But yes, to answer whatever you said, I make content for cloud.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I'm actually looking at some of these. You've got an Irish whiskey cask, Caribbean rum cask, and Islay whiskey cask. So that actually all sounds pretty great. I will be looking into that pretty soon.
My other favorite beer, which I haven't had in a long time, and I don't even know how you get it in Canada. It's from the States. It's called Ashtray Blackheart, and it is the darkest beer I've ever seen in my life. It's smoky. It's, I believe, a... what's darker, port or stout? Porters. Porters are darker.
I think porters usually are, but it goes back and forth depending on the...
What's a Guinness? It's a stout or a porter?
That's a stout.
No, I think stouts are darker. So yeah, it's the darkest beer. It's the smokiest beer I've ever had. Really good with Niçoise olives, which are little tiny olives, and nuts. I used to get it in London, Ontario. It's the only place in London, Ontario that would serve a medium rare burger, which is not a normal thing in Canada. Everyone's afraid. Oh yeah, everyone's afraid of what's the thing you get salmonella poisoning, E. coli or something?
It's one of those. I'm trying to remember what comes in beef, but I mean nowadays, from what I've heard,
both
the processes behind meat and everything, unless you're like buying your beef from a farm that's absolutely not being inspected, the odds of you getting sick from undercooked meat is remarkably low. Again, as long as they're
like
following
ground beef,
anything. Yeah. Cause beef tartare is super big. You can eat raw pork all day long as it's following all of the proper guidelines and everything like that. But of course you leave it out, let it get wet, let it get moist. All of a sudden you're in trouble. So
beautiful color on this beer.
Oh, that looks really, really good.
Really can smell the toffee in it. Or toffee hint flavors. So in Canada, the reason why we don't have medium ground beef, I think maybe in the 80s or 90s or something, there was or 70s, I don't know, there was like an outbreak where people ate and then died from it. And so since then, all meat in Canada is like for burgers are cooked fully through. And if you even try to give somebody a medium rare burger, they will not eat it. But
terrible.
This one place in London, Ontario, they were skirting the laws, and they were serving these medium rare burgers, and they're really, really good. But even myself, I don't feel confident enough to prepare a medium rare burger because I assume you have to go through a lot of process to do it, kind of like DevOps as we transition back to cloud.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So kind of like DevOps, you know.
Whatever DevOps is. I usually promote the term cloud engineer, but I might as well just say DevOps because I almost feel like they're pretty close to be interchangeable at this point. It's just whatever resonates the most with people.
With platform engineer and all of that kind of coming in, I kind of agree that, you know, DevOps engineer really isn't a thing if you want to get all, you know, official about it. A lot of people get mad about the term DevOps engineer because it's DevOps is a process that engineers should be following. But what are your thoughts on that? Hit on that.
You go to job postings and they just put any title to stuff, and the responsibilities half the time don't match the job description. So it's like, right, make up your own definitions and then just pick out the responsibilities you want to do. But at least in Canada, you know, DevOps usually means working with servers, automating stuff, maybe being on call to manage that stuff, stuff like that, right? But again,
sounds kind of like a sysops, I guess, if you're tying that into AWS, the sysops engineer associate would probably tie into that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone likes being called a sysops engineer, though.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not a sexy name. So all of a sudden it's gone. Doesn't matter what's correct. What matters is it sexy? That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But it's very important that you learn Python, right? Everyone's telling. I just noticed the other day somebody was focusing on their DevOps path.
Yeah.
And the advice people were giving me is like, only learn Python. That's all you need to know.
Only.
And I kind of go, that seems only.
Yeah, like, that's a little crazy.
I know. Like for me, I was like, why not learn them all? I mean, I'm crazy. I just say, why not learn them all? But like to be proficient enough to like be comfortable and saying, oh yeah, I can write Java, I can write Go, I can write Rust.
I'd say Go and Python together are going to be huge. Werner just said in his keynote at reInvent, if you're not learning Rust, you're insane. But I'm not sure that most people are going to need Rust at many levels unless you are a software engineer. But Go and Python are definitely the things that I would recommend do plan on really picking it up.
What about this new language? It's like a Mojo Jojo. You know what I'm talking about? Python. It's like a Python language for the ML folks.
Name of it. Yeah, I saw Mojo. That the other day.
I think it's just Mojo.
Let me see.
Yeah, I think it's called Mojo, which yep. I got confused at first. I thought it was like something that Facebook made, but they actually made a C optimized version of PHP, which I can't remember what they call theirs.
Well, I mean, you know, you've also got Scala, which got really popular for a bit. And then Julia is another one that, you know, everybody said was going to be the one for data science. So I guess the time will tell if Mojo is going to go kind of the way they are, which they're used, but they're certainly not nearly as popular as Python, or if Mojo could actually.
But I think overtake. Like if you need stuff faster, it's a smaller jump to Mojo. Not that I've used it, so I can't really say where the hard bits are. But you know, as C optimized similar languages, that's not a new concept, right? Ruby had one that's called Crystal, and then there's obviously PHP made. Facebook made one for PHP. But coming back to Scala, I think that is my favorite user group I've ever used to go to in Toronto. I'm not a Scala programmer, but the community is so welcoming and they're so smart that I would go back there and still not really understand Scala. So
I could see that. I mean, it was kind of a hybrid between it was a little bit easier, closer to Python, but still had some of the performance of Java, if I remember correctly. And, a lot of people are using it with Apache Spark and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think it might have solved a problem at the time that maybe isn't as much of a problem for people anymore as Python gets more advanced and, you know, processors and CPU, RAM, everything else becomes so ubiquitous. I don't know. I just don't know that people are needing it as much, but I imagine there are some pipelines that still have it. So it would be something I would definitely be exposed to.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I mean, I think it's just because it was a functional programming language. People just really enjoyed that. Of course, you know, functional languages don't seem to be super popular or utilized. I remember Y Combinator was always promoting Clojure all the time.
Yep.
But I've never come across anyone in the wild using Clojure. But one day when I'm totally done cloud, I will code in Emacs on Clojure just for the fun of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I don't know. Rust, it just seems like it's, you can't go more than 10 feet at any software engineering conference or anything like that without somebody talking about Rust nowadays. And I mean, I agree that it's fantastic, especially I know a lot of embedded people are starting to look into Rust. A lot of people who want to get really close to the metal, which I don't think that's actually why Rust was given its name, but that's always the way I think of it is Rust is on the metal.
I never even thought of that. I just thought it was called Rust and they had a crab for some reason. I never thought it through as to why it was called that. I really like Rust over Go. And the reason I know this is because it's an unpublished course. It's from like 7 months ago that I'll finish at some point, but I was trying to teach everyone all the popular programming languages for cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, do I not like writing Go code. And wow, was Rust so much easier to use.
Really?
And yeah, well, at first Rust is hard, but like I would just say that the documentation, when you're getting into it and you get past the first hurdles, Rust becomes easier and easier as you go, and it has a lot more flexibility in the language. At least that was my experience with it. But you know, again, I don't write big systems in these things, at least not yet. So
yeah, no, that's super interesting. And yeah, if you ever finish that course, I'll definitely be taking it. I mean, as I've said many times, you know, I started my journey. I didn't start my journey. I actually backfilled some of my gaps using Harvard CS50. Started with C, and then, you know, obviously I already knew Python at the time, but once I learned C, a lot more about Python and everything made sense. And now walking into other languages makes a lot more sense to me than it did before. I mean, what got you started? Because you've been coding for God, how long?
I don't know, forever. You know, before all this, my mom owned a computer store. She like a repair store. So it's part of the family business. Before she did that, she worked for Bell. Which is the company that makes phones or has phones.
I'm actually sitting here saying, like everybody should know this. But like so, Bell in America has been gone forever.
Let me go even further back. So there was this guy named Alexander Graham Bell. I think he's Canadian too. And he's the first to make a phone. And so anyway, they're a large telecom, at least they're in Canada. They are, I think they're in the States as well. And my mom was the administrator for Bell. So she would manage all their computers and fix them and stuff like that. So as a kid, always had four or five computers in the house when nobody else had them. Had like bulletin boards and internet in our house before anyone else did. I think what happened was the owner of Bell died, and then they promoted his son, and his son wanted to make a big... what do you call it? He wanted to, you know, show off his peacock feathers, and he decided to build a new building in Thunder Bay, even though the old building was fine. And then they had wasted so much money on this new building that they had to sell it off and then downsize and move Bell out of Thunder Bay into Toronto. My mom didn't want to move, so she, you know, quit Bell, and then or whatever, got laid off. I don't know. And then a few years later, she started a computer store, and so I was repairing computers and doing training on site. I was the person that would go on site to someone's house, fix it on the spot, or provide training to really old people.
No, I've been there. I absolutely, that's my first tech job on my own was computer repair. So I empathize with you completely.
And so, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And then because she was part of Pero, which was like, it's a women's network for women business owners, they kept coming asking her to make websites, and she doesn't make websites. And I'm like, I could do that. And I was like 11 or 12, I don't know. And so I just started making websites for all these women business owners, and they started paying me. And so I did not like I wanted to do websites. I wanted to make video games. but that's how I got into the website part of it. And then that got into web programming. And then it kind of snowballed from there. So that's kind of how I made my way to cloud. The way I got into web application development was I was building websites, obviously, for all these women business owners. And I really wanted to build web apps. And I just couldn't get a job in Toronto or anywhere else, even though I was really skilled. I have dyslexia, so I'm really, really bad at the interview process. Apparently, tech people don't want to hire you if you can't speak coherently. They think that you're full of it.
Well, you're doing pretty well so far.
A lot of practice. And so I ended up getting work in Europe, in Spain, because it was an open source project. And one of my clients, who was a women tech career coach for like large enterprise companies, she wanted to use this open source software that was called Teambox. It was a competitor to Basecamp. And it was written in Ruby on Rails. And I had practiced learning how to build Rails apps for 4 or 5 years or whatever without getting a job in that. And I said, this is not very good. And so I had spare time on my hands and I spent 2 weeks fixing things on it. And I was on Twitter. Twitter, it still existed back then. And I would just say, don't like this code base. And I complained about it. And the founder of the company just said, oh, what would you improve? And I said, well, I won't tell you, I'll show you. And I just started coding it all. And then after 2 weeks, I said, I don't have any more time. I got to go back to my work that pays me. And they said, right. Hey, do you want to move to Barcelona and be my CTO? And I said, okay. Didn't know who this person was, but I wasn't getting any jobs in Canada. So I moved over there. Apparently I saved the company and they got more funding. And then from there, I just kept building web apps for startups.
Yeah. Awesome. So where would you recommend people starting with HTML, or would you recommend starting with something like Python or, you know, whatever?
I just think that there's a bucket of knowledge you need to learn.
Yeah.
However you want to get into tech that keeps you motivated, that's what you should do. If you want to start HTML, you can do that. If you want to start in the IT space, like, you know, how people really like working with computers, like A+ certification. Sure. If you want to start with Linux, go ahead. If you want to start with programming, it doesn't really matter, at least in my opinion, where you start. The point is that you have to cover a lot of ground. And whatever's going to keep you motivated.
That's a recurring theme in these podcasts and people I talk to and everything else. Studying sucks, school sucks, whatever. Do as many practical things that you can do that keep you excited. Eventually you're going to hit a wall and it's going to take a weekend that you're going to hate, you know, reading a book or whatever. But overall, I think as long as you're moving the needle and you're constantly improving, even if it's something that's not the most popular thing, if it's something that helps you get something out the door and build your skill, I think it's worth it.
Hey, Derek, how's your beer?
It's actually pretty great.
Have you been drinking it? Or?
Yeah, I've been drinking it. Actually, so this is a 16-ouncer, and mm-hmm. I poured about 12 in here, and I've actually refilled it since no, not the whole beer.
Okay.
I drank it down a good bit and then added more.
For those who are watching, Derek is doing podcasts back-to-back, so depending on which order a guest comes in, he might be more red in the face. So just watch out for
that. Oh, yeah, definitely. I know a lot of European blood here. I can get pretty red if things get a little too saucy.
It's like that fellow that does the hot ones.
But you're just doing it with beers. Some ghost pepper chips, and I almost brought them out just to see. But it's not that chip. It's not that super spicy chip. It's really not that hot. Trader Joe's just doesn't bring the heat like I'd expect.
Well, I want to grow hot peppers. I can't eat them anymore. I can't have any spicy food anymore. My body said no more.
Sure.
Forget it. The only thing you'd have, as long as it's boiled and it's plain, you can eat it.
So like all of New England, a lot of Chicago food. Yeah, makes sense.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, boiled, it's okay. But the other aspect to like my career is always I've been really into volunteer work for some weird reason. It's not actually weird. It's that my grandfather was really into volunteer work, like a lot. And every single weekend I did volunteer work. I had to do volunteer work.
Oh, so, wow. And like not in an orange jumpsuit or anything. Like you,
no,
you actually...
no. Like it'd be like Parks Canada or like doing stuff at the parks or running a candy store for like the community kids or going to bingo to raise money for people to do local sports for kids. Just tons of stuff like that. My mom's really into volunteer work too. I think she just won an award for something. It's like the Ontario award for whatever. I don't think I'm supposed to say what it is because she's like, it's a secret. But I'm like, no one that knows she's going to watch this podcast and find out. So like, it's in my DNA to do volunteer work, whether I want to do it or not. And so that's why I make free content, which makes no business sense whatsoever.
Oh, come on. I think it makes a little bit of business sense. I mean, it is it's a funnel, I think they call in the marketing circles that I've seen. You know, I imagine you get a lot of users, but I mean, I will say you provide more value than most people, you know, who'll do like a teaser video here and there, like, hey, here's one little thing. You actually were like, you allow people for free to get certifications and actually get through. It's
we don't really do impressive. Samples here. We do full courses, full practice exams, like free. Yep. And I don't know. I mean, like, again, it could capture more of the funnel if there was more charge there and nicer packaging, but I don't know. It's just not in me to do it. You know, it's just how it is. So.
Yeah, no, that's great. And, you know, I see you're always involved in one way and another, you know, one way or another, trying to help anybody who's disenfranchised, disadvantaged, whatever. You're kind of always sticking your nose into somebody's business, trying to make sure that everybody's getting equal treatment, and it's fantastic.
Well, I think so. It can be stressful, but you know, somebody has to do it. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, huge help to the community for sure. Yeah. So, what are you working on right now? Like, if I didn't convince you to come on this podcast, do you have anything that you're allowed to talk about that you're doing right now?
Well, I do have secret community projects for 2024 because right now on this podcast is 2023. Right now, I'm just really focused on AWS content. So I have really, really neglected my AWS certification free content. And so I'm doing a massive refresh on it. We're talking like 10 times more content. I'll give you an example. So before I had 12 slides for S3. Now I have 107 or... Actually, no, it's more than that. It's like 124, God. And that's just the lecture content alone. So
yeah, I'm taking a drink to that. Hang on.
Yeah.
Got to calm my nerves.
Well, it's weird. It, like, the more practice you get, the faster you can do it. And this is only in, like, the last week. So I'm producing massive amounts of content for this quarter. I'd like to get out the cloud roadmap. So something that I've always really wanted to do is have a generic cloud roadmap and to try to bring other content creators in there so that people have a multi-cloud way of learning. And as we talked earlier, jump in where you want to jump in and move around. Yep. You just have to fill out the roadmap. And I think that's really missing in our community. I think the hard part about that. Oh, sorry, yes.
What's that?
Oh, I thought you were going to interject there, but
no.
I was going to say that the hard part about building that roadmap is you have to go across the cloud before you do it because every single cloud service provider has incredible bias built into it. And they will give you an idea of how the world is shaped, and it's just not how it is. And so
they're trying to dig that moat. I mean, we've all been hearing about moats lately after all that OpenAI news and stuff. They're just like, oh, we don't have a moat. But I think that's kind of what it is. You know, you say the word multi-cloud, people's heads explode these days. But I think understanding all those paradigms is really big, and understanding how each one approaches it is kind of nice. I've found Azure to be basically geared towards like the CFO, it feels like. AWS is just throwing paint at the wall all the time, and usually it's doing okay. It's not bad. GCP always feels kind of like a startup focused thing where, you know, they move just as fast as you do, for better or for worse. Sometimes they're going to release something that's great. Sometimes they're going to kill something that's great. Really, like never domains. Seem to know. Yeah, exactly.
Never hear the end about Google domains, but
I had a few.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how those approaches are. And the question is, what is going to change? I'm not an economic analyst, cloud analyst, tech analyst.
Yeah, sounds good.
But
yeah. You're not Corey Quinn.
Yeah, I'm not a Corey Quinn. But you know, there are other players that could crop up. You know, there's my question is like, is what are they called? Acme Connector Cloud. Are they going to fill a space somewhere there? Is Intel going to show up? And like Intel has this crazy, crazy large offering in their AI space. You know, NVIDIA is playing well with everybody. Will they ever have their own cloud offering? I don't know. It's just, it really comes down to hardware and everything's AI driven and ML driven. So there's space for other competitors. It's just,
well, I just saw AMD is developing an AI chip that Microsoft and OpenAI are considering courting. So that'll be very interesting to see what happens.
I think it's just something we need to really pay attention to is hardware, because I think that's going to have a large tie-in, because these models or these technologies really rely on super optimized hardware.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get better at understanding how this hardware is going to influence, the next year or two. And I think at least right now, when this video is being produced, that's all anybody's talking about hardware. Like, it's going to be Google's TPU version 5, or it's going to be titanium.
Oh no! It's Trainium.
Trainium.
It's Trainium. Yeah. Like, okay. Training Trainium. A model. Yeah, AWS is not known for their wordplay. It's pretty much always just a straight up fist in the mouth, you know, like it's right on the nose. They have no subtlety, no interestingness. It's just, yeah.
But Derek, how are you finding the AI stuff? Are you getting into it or?
Oh yeah. No, of course. I was going to ask you the same actually, when you have 100 slides to do, how much help you were going to get from that. Now AI stuff is absolutely killing it. Obviously I'm using at least 3 or 4 services to help edit this podcast. Riverside does a really good job of pulling out interesting moments within the podcast. It doesn't always nail it, but just like ChatGPT or anything else, you do actually have to kind of go in and throw your own special touch to it.
Right?
But it's enough. It's enough to save a ton of time. The transcription is leaps and bounds different than it used to be. I think I corrected one word. Last podcast was an hour. I think I corrected one word, and it was Linux Academy. It actually put the Linux like name LENNOX instead of LINUX, and that's it. That was the only correction I had to make for an entire hour of tech content. So I've got to say it's looking really, really good.
In terms of like cloud education, I think it's going to make things maybe not more competitive, but it's definitely going to raise the bar on what you have to do to be an educator in this space.
Yeah.
Because if you have stuff that can generate out content, even if it's bad content, still people can put that out, and now that's what you're competing against, right? So,
well, people are already putting out bad content, let's be honest. Yeah.
but I mean, like, there's a bare minimum bar, like what is the production of the slide, like what is the sound of the voice? Now, like, you don't have a good voice, you go buy a voice, you go buy it and you can use it,
right?
You're not good at graphics, don't worry, it can assemble it for you. You don't have the technical knowledge, it can piece it together and it can be good enough. And so, you know, as a content educator, I have to go, okay, what are the components that AI can't do, right? It can't validate, at least right now, it can't validate what you can do in an account. So we created validators. It can't do one-to-one instruction in the same way. Like, it kind of can. You can ask it to do stuff. But I've seen people learning with ChatGPT, and it spins their wheels and they're not getting anywhere, and it's not telling them the things that they shouldn't be doing. Like, I saw someone, they made a architectural diagram and it looks nice, but it's not how everyone expects architectural diagrams to look like. It's kind of like their own invention of one.
Right.
So, you know, I'm always saying, okay, what can I do that AI can't do? Because I think that's where the value is going to be. And when I did a poll recently, I said, hey, do you want me to add more AI stuff to my learning platform, or do you want more people? And everyone said, more people, please. So
that's good to hear. I think, you know, I mean, this is something we can't deny. It's coming. Like, this is happening. And troubleshooting is probably something that's going to get a lot more important as you get more garbage code being thrown around, you know, from ChatGPT. And I mean, it's going to be something like, okay, this works pretty well, except there's one little issue with the CSS, or like there's one little thing with this, or one little thing with this. And being able to go through the error messages and troubleshoot this type of stuff is going to become more and more important, because the bulk of the work's going to be done. You're probably not going to be sitting there writing, you know, and typing your entire day trying to create something. What you're going to be doing is troubleshooting stuff that's already out there and optimizing. So I think that's probably, at least based on my current experience, where things are going to go. But it's going to be really interesting.
Well,
sure.
Then how do you evaluate someone on the job? Like, you really have to make sure that they're doing the work and the troubleshooting. So maybe the bar is being raised in terms of manually verifying people are able to do the work. Again, I don't know how people hiring are going to work through that. Obviously, right now in the industry, all the companies want everyone to go back into office. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with overworking. If anyone's familiar with that term.
No, I saw a news article yesterday that said return to office is dead now. So I'm seeing both. Everybody's just trying to get clicks on that.
They're saying, like, at AWS that a lot of people are resigning because they don't want to return back to office, and that it's part of AWS play to do layoffs without having to lay people off by having an unreasonable ask. Again, I don't really know, but I'm just saying that, I don't know. It's going to change in terms of, I think it's going to change the way people hire, or people are going to have a much more diligent process. And you're going to really have to stand out to show that you actually have the skills. You know, at least that's what I think.
The thing that scares me about that is that they're going to start rolling out some just horrible, horrible tests and, you know, ways like they actually want to challenge, like, recruiters and things are going to want to challenge themselves to break people on the interview process. And I think that's going to end up weeding out people that are solid candidates. They're already doing that, you know, elite code tests and stuff like that. It's like, you know, sorry, this guy can't do your weird rendition of FizzBuzz that you spent days coming up with. But, you know, nobody's doing FizzBuzz in the real world. Now, FizzBuzz, of course, is an example. It's pretty easy. You should probably learn how to do FizzBuzz, but I don't think it should be an interview question.
Well, it's either that, or what they're going to do is they're just going to go back and hire directly from universities. So I think, again, AWS said this as well, where they're like, yeah, we're going to start just focusing on hiring from known schools. Like, the one of the best schools for computer science in Canada is called Waterloo. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you have someone from Waterloo and you hire them, they're good. There's no even vetting. People pay them to come to co-op to have them just for a short period of time, and they're great. And so, you know, it could be that you have to go through something like that and have a very high bar where they know that people are doing the processing for them. But that makes it hard because you have to have a lot of money to go to these schools, and you have to, you know, it's tricky.
Well, do you think is going to happen with these schools, though? Their reputation is going to, I mean, you know, the cheating and the using AI, or whether you call it cheating or not, that's going to go all the way down the stack here. You know, it's going to start at high school and then go to college and then go to everything. Like, if you're using AI, it's just like going and using Texas Instruments TI-89 calculator instead of the 83.
But their missions is like, here's a whiteboard, go do it. And we're going to watch you do it. And they manually verify everyone that applies. And you have to have a big check if you want to go to that school to begin with.
That sounds terrible.
So I'm just saying that I don't think it's a problem for these schools. They already do everything manually anyway. But it's not really fair for accessibility around the world. So again, I don't have a solution for it, but it is what it is. So
yeah. Well, hopefully somebody out there is thinking about this. You know, I know I definitely am. And a lot of people are hopefully kind of thinking about, how do we prevent this from being a hiring nightmare for people? How do we prevent the people falling into the cracks who didn't have the money to go to Waterloo or Harvard or MIT or wherever they got to go.
I think those processes are still the same. It's just that you have to demonstrate your skills in a direct way. So like, again, the way I got in tech wasn't through interviews. It was literally doing work on a repo. And they said, oh, you've changed the company. Come over here. And that was through open source, right? Actually, a lot of my jobs was just I was making something that this other company wanted, right? My mindset is always like, if I don't have a job, I'm just going to start building something and pretend that it's a real company. And then I'm just going to show it to people that have similar products, and then they'll hire me. And that's worked every single time. Even with my current company, we built our learning platform, and there's places that want the same learning platform as us and say, can we have a copy of it? Can you make derivatives of it? Do you know what I mean? Because they just want the solution. It's a non-traditional way of getting a job. And there's their own challenges, right? There's that upfront effort when you don't have money while working through that I think a lot of people struggle with or not able to do. Mm-hmm. But that's how I navigated that stuff. So I never had to do interviews.
No, I think we just found the promo for this episode right there. That's fantastic. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people do miss. Again, they're trying to solve their problem. They're trying to solve is to pass a test or whatever, get the certifications, which I think those will help you frame everything you need to do. But at the end of the day, you need to solve real problems. You know, mimic a company, do whatever you can.
Well, there's nothing stopping you from doing it, right? Like you just pick a thing and you go, let's build a, like one company I really like that we utilize is called Senja, and it's a testimonial website. All it does is collect testimonials for our site. Do you know what I mean? Like there's nothing stopping anyone from building that. And maybe, you know, they don't end up becoming a startup, but maybe Senja will hire you because you showed all the same expertise and you excelled in areas where they had pain points. When you tread the same ground as other people, you'll find the same pain points. And if you get through them, then they'll want to hire you. It's as simple as that.
But I think that's really, really thoughtful advice actually is if you're trying to get into an industry or whatever, go and just build something that's interesting to these companies, whether even if you're just copying the company, it doesn't really matter. Just build it, just get out there and get it done. And either they'll hire you because you're absolutely perfect for the job. Obviously, I know at previous jobs, we definitely hired people who built competitors and just didn't quite pull it off. But the reason they didn't pull it off isn't because their engineering sucked. It's because their sales sucked or their, timing sucked or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's certainly
everyone says
a thing.
Everyone says to build a project anyway. So why not just build a project for real? And I mean, obviously you can't go full steam into it. Maybe you have another job. Maybe you're mm-hmm. still not fully in tech. Like, you know, I was working on websites and then I got into web apps. So I was doing both at the same time. I had to kind of juggle those two things. But, you know, there is a way to transition over. Even my current company, like before this, I wanted to stop working for startups. I worked for some startups, didn't get my fair shake with my equity. And so then I made a firm with my previous business partner. And I just wanted to build a single app, which was just like Teambox. I called it 3POC, to be kind of like for time, epoch. It just never got to where it needed to go because my business partner just wanted more money and we were making good money on contracts. Uh-huh. And I didn't want to keep doing contracts because they're stressful imagine working for a new startup every 3 to 4 months.
Ooh.
Yeah.
No.
And you know they're going to fail and you tell them they're going to fail, but they're saying, no, we're the golden goose. We're going to make it. I was like, okay, I'll just provide you the tech. And then it's like breaking up. It's like worst breakup ever, every 3-4 months over and over.
Right.
My business partner wasn't doing that. I was doing all that. And so I just wanted out of that. So I tried to go back to the startup scene and I tried to work with a stable company. And they're like, oh, we're stable. We make millions. We're in real estate. So, okay, that sounds great. Move back to Toronto. I'm like, I don't really want to move to Toronto. It's really expensive. You got to move back here. Okay. Moved back to Toronto 3 months later because I was in the startup scene. I ended up connecting with the previous co-founder who had sold the company and exited. And he said, oh, you're working there? Oh, they're going to get liquidated. You better get out of there. they're not making enough money. Like they're making millions, but they're not making enough. And they're going to get liquidated because the investors aren't happy. And so I went, oh, darn, I went with a stable company that I thought would be around for a long time because they're making a bunch of money. I guess I'll go back and do some contracts. And then I worked three contracts at the same time, the exact same time. And on top of that, I created all the learning content because I'm like, I just want to do education. That's all I ever wanted to do. And so I got really fat because I sat forever. That's when I was fat, Andrew. And I worked for, I built three apps at the same darn time. And
God, that was the most Canadian thing ever. Three apps at the same darn time.
Oh, yeah. And which, by the way, one of them it was an okay idea, but generative AI would absolutely just put that startup out of business.
Right.
And anyway, so yeah, I made that transition over and literally within, I think like me starting I started making a profit within, I would say 2 months.
Damn.
And so a lot of startups, they don't make money for 3 years. And for me, I kept telling people like, I can do it myself. And they're like, yeah, we don't believe you. I'm like, but I've worked for all these startups and I was CTO previously. Nobody ever believes you. It doesn't matter how many times you go for a new job. You always have to reprove yourself. Unless you start your own company, then you don't have to prove it to anybody. You just go do it. And right. If you fail, then you know for sure.
Once you don't pay rent, you have a pretty solid understanding of your ability to continue.
Yeah. My whole life's been that. Just like, gotta not die. Gotta pay my rent. But like,
well,
I made good money.
Try having American health insurance on top of that. Well, but you know,
that's a serious problem. I made good money. The issue was that, you know, like, it's just like contract to contract. You know, like those things don't last forever. So you're always lining new ones up. And then I moved like six times. And every time you move, it was a huge expense. And so in Canada, things are like way more expensive than the US for weird reasons. Like our housing is 10 times and it's crazy here. So it's not like I didn't make good money. It's just like I could not work remote, which I do now. As you can see, I live in more of a remote-ish area.
Yes, I see that very accurate portrayal behind your head.
There's not mountains like that around here, but we got trees like that. But it was just – it's just I wanted to actually keep my money that I was making. And so I tricked my wife to move up here, and we shouldn't want to move up here. It's cold. And I got a house.
Hey, man, how much of that beer have you had? Don't worry. I can edit that one out.
Still got another, I don't care. I'm not going to get in trouble. She doesn't watch podcasts.
I don't think anybody watches this podcast.
I moved like 5 or 6 times because she's like, I don't like living here because there's rats. And I lived in Nova Scotia, Halifax, and beautiful place to live there. But all the houses have rats in them. Doesn't matter what house you live in, they got rats.
That's not fun.
I don't know why. It's just like we moved in there and I'm like, have you had rats in this house? And they're like, no, we have never had rats in this house. I'm like, are you sure? And they're like, yeah.
What's that noise?
And then 2 weeks later, mice on one and rats on the other. I learned that mice and rats will not cohabitate the same level. So they can be on different levels. And then I asked people like, what's with the rats? And they're like, oh, every house has rats here. It's like,
oh, so there's like a threshold. So they can actually say no if it's under like 20 rats or whatever. So the house only has a few rats. It's not rats.
Well, I mean, I think it was more like it's an unreasonable ask to say, is there rats in the house? Because the chance of getting rats is so common there.
Yeah.
And people don't seem to mind it, which was really bizarre to me.
Not really,
but that's like downtown Halifax, right? It wasn't a dirty house. Nothing was dirty. It was just, anyway, so I was like, I can't stand the idea of there being rats. The rats are big, by the way. And so we moved back to Southern Ontario, and we just kept bumping around because housing was so expensive, and I should have bought a condo a long time ago when I could have in Toronto.
So one of my favorite allegories in tech, and I'm taking a little bit of a stretch here, pulling it to tech, is how debugging was actually getting bugs out of computers, because computers were large enough to have actual bugs in them. I've always thought that was definitely interesting and probably something a lot of our newer listeners have never thought about.
Is that the origin of it or no?
Yep. No, it's 100% the origin. They actually pulling like, you know, roaches and things out of the like huge mainframes that you would have back in the day. And back in the day, not my day, like, you know, the 60s, 50s and 60s, I think.
I don't know. I'm it's always interesting how computers are so wasteful in terms of their compute and their memory and stuff like that. And it's just like, it was so cool reading. I have like these, they're called black books because they break. I don't know why they're actually called black books, but they're called black books for like Wolfenstein and Doom. And they describe the breakdowns in terms of how they built those games. And it's just really interesting to hear the level of limitations they had to work around. And now I have like, my computer's only like 6 years old and it can't play any modern games because the CPU is bottlenecked because they keep making games more bloated.
Yeah.
And nothing looks better.
Yep.
From 6 years ago.
No, I think the new Call of Duty, from what I've heard, I have not played Call of Duty in forever. They've repackaged it with a new installer that includes the assets for all of the games, and you have no option. So if you buy the latest game, you have to have the information and the resources for all of the games stored in the same installer. So you're looking, I don't remember, but it's a lot of gigabytes. Like, you know, I think it's over 100 gigabytes, like that just sits on your computer that unless you pay money for, you don't ever get to do it. Just sits there and keeps up space. And I know gigabytes are not that much, but I mean, on a personal computer, gigabytes still can be a lot. I mean, you're still looking, especially with SSDs, you've seen people's hard drives drop to 256 gigabytes when 2 terabytes used to be the norm. But if you want a fast hard drive, 2 terabyte SSD still is pretty expensive.
I really like terminal-based games, even though they're really old. There's one called Space Trader 2002, or maybe Space Wars. Space Wars. We need to know this.
Yep. I know. I eventually I'm going to get some sponsor to just come on and pay me enough money to have someone to sit there and look stuff up, like on all the really popular podcasts.
Space Trader 2002. Anyway, there's this game. I'm going to call it Space Trader. And it's basically a game where you have a little ship and you go to different sectors of space and you basically pick up cargo and trade that cargo in other places and you can colonize planets. You can shoot a Genesis torpedo, I think, to terraform a planet. And it's all text-based, but, you know.
Hashtag terraform.
You connect... Yeah, there you go. You can connect via Telenet, and the other online players can play. And I just like, I would love to play that one of those games, but there's not enough people to play them anymore because nobody cares about them.
Well, if there's anything that I hope this podcast does for you, I hope that it finds you someone to play Space Trader with.
2002.
Oh, 2002. Sorry.
Or Space.
Is it like a 99 version that sucks?
I think it came out in the 80s. Like, I think it might have been produced in, it's in 84, 87. But I don't know. Like, it's really interesting because I just feel like you get to do more things in these text-based games. There's another mud called, like, Arfin Wolf or something. And the amount of detail in these text-based games is crazy that I feel like our modern games are just, like, total washed-down garbage, except for GTA 6, which will be amazing.
Hey, we're going back to Vice City. I'm a little excited. I think I enjoyed Vice City more than anything.
But, I had to look that one up. I was like, is that Vice City? And it was Vice City.
Yep.
But I never actually played the San Andreas game, which I'm sure is a good game. But
I lived in LA and didn't bother with it. I just honestly, I think I kind of moved on past GTA at this point. I'm sure it's probably still amazing. I just do not have the time to sit and think like, yeah, let's go do this. And it's just a lot there to think about. I'm more into the first person, go hide on a mountain and shoot stuff type thing, and maybe go exploring and find little weird loot boxes type life at this point.
I play games for like 10 minutes and then I feel guilty and then I go work on cloud content.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast are thankful for that.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, anything else you would like to cover? Any big news you want to share or anything like that?
I'm rewatching the TV show Future Man. It's about this fellow that has to.
I love that news. So I actually met some people who were on the team who worked with Future Man when I lived in LA, and they were actually very nice people.
It is such a good show. I love that show.
Is Will Ferrell a producer, I think?
I don't know. I didn't actually look up the production team.
I think Will Ferrell's a producer, and I think
he made something
Will
that
Ferrell.
Was funny.
Let me see.
Funny or Die is not funny. Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen, not Will Ferrell. God. Well, another goofy white guy with crazy hair.
But every single season, it just gets better and better. And it has
Seth Rogen. I just remember them telling me that Seth Rogen's like the most serious guy you've ever met if he's not on screen.
Oh.
Yeah, like he doesn't just goof around the office and stuff like that. Like he's super serious, super chill. Just gets in, gets the job done, and then just out the door. So I thought that was interesting to hear from the Hollywood insiders.
Well, I really liked Haley Joel Osment in it, as he hasn't been in a lot of stuff, but in that
he's
one
in
he really
Silicon Valley, actually.
Was he in Silicon Valley? I don't remember. What did he do in that one?
He is a VR startup guy.
I really don't remember.
Way
that.
Over what? The top. Yeah, he's in a later season.
Later seasons season. Or early
season? Later season.
Okay.
He's way over the top. There's a bunch of really shady startup-y stuff, of course, that goes around with it. And then he was also in What We Do in the Shadows as a zombie. Hmm.
I really couldn't watch Silicon Valley I didn't watch it when it was out because it was just too much like startup culture for me. And I'm just
I mean, that's the point. I've talked to venture capitalists who refuse to watch it. They said that they can't, like, it makes them feel a little bit queasy, probably because they're the villains the entire time, but there's that. I won't go into that in case I need funding one day, but yeah.
Well, my startup days are behind me. I'm not a startup. I am just a company that makes cloud content, and I will never, ever, ever, ever take funding from anybody because it's a nightmare.
I think they call that a business.
Yeah, I'm just a business.
Yep. No, that's great. Well, yeah, Andrew, if there's nothing, anything else, how are you doing on your beer? Are you about finished up?
No.
After giving me so much crap. Well, anyway, I think we are about to hit an hour, so we'll probably wind this one down. And if there's nothing else, thank you everybody for listening to another episode of Ops and Hops. My name is Derek. This is Andrew Brown. Say bye to everybody, Andrew Brown.
I haven't washed my hair in 2 weeks. I ran out of. I have this shampoo I buy called T-Gel shampoo. It's like a.
It's I know like exactly a what it is.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
And so, I mean, I'm still taking showers. It's just I'm not washing my hair. And I'm like, I was looking at it. I'm like, my hair looks pretty good. I'm like, have I gotten to the past that I don't need shampoo anymore?
Andrew knows how much I hate editing. And so I think he is peppering in everything he possibly can to force me to have to edit this thing. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day and cheers.